lecture by L. Ron Hubbard from the 17th Advanced Clinical Course, entitled The Assist. Copyright by L. Ron Hubbard, 1957, all world rights reserved.
This is the 18th lecture of the 17th ACC, March 21st, 1957. The subject of this lecture is The Assist. Definition. An assist all stretched, taped, and running to go at all. department and an auditor. Now that is really when an auditing session begins. And I have seen somebody audit a paper there for 75 hours trying to start an intensive without ever realizing that he was trying to start an intensive. The intensive never began. No auditing session was ever established. And a few minor things happened, but not very much. So, we have a gradient scale, don't we? We have auditing, which is tackled on a relatively loose basis, which might be out in the street or in the kitchen or almost a coffee shop. Coffee shop auditing is, by the way, to render is locational processing. You audience to respond to it. Polar Lagoon Steaks is not always as reliable as good old Rover. But he will do this. He will do this. That's not a snide or simple comparison. It's well thought out. It's actually completely plotted. Just like this. Fellow has a bad shoulder. So, you touch his hand of the same arm and you say, close your eyes, look at my fingers. You touch him on the shoulder and you say, look at my fingers. He still has his eyes closed. You touch him on the elbow and you say, look at my fingers. Or anywhere on his body, you touch him and say, look at my fingers. And what is this? This is a communication process which uses his attention over from a concentration upon the injury to something else which is quite near the injury and thus doesn't result in much of a shock. The rest of the pain that he's holding in abeyance will suddenly pull through and break through the dam, and he will respond. It induces havingness. It is not a very good process, but it is positive. Normally gets very positive results, and it can be done by an untrained Homo sapiens. But if you ask him to control the creature, he would balk. You haven't asked Homo sapiens to do anything more than he can do, which is laying on his hands, trying to help out, and he will leave it. So that is a very interesting assist from the standpoint that you can teach this assist to almost anybody. You say if somebody has a bruise, an injury, a burn, a cut. The way to handle this, Ladies Aid Society, is to tell a person to close his eyes, and then you touch the area, near or distant. You want to get technical, so they know that you've gotten technical. You could say you alternate it near and distant. The vicinity of the injury, and ask them with their eyes closed to look at your fingers. And you contact them this way many times, and they will experience sudden pains in the area, and you will discover that the psychic trauma has been discharged. It's strange, you see. Doubtful if a psychologist could be brought to do this. He would know what was wrong with the fellow. Was the fellow the fact that the fellow had been too wrongly associated with rats? I think that's the main thing or something. He would have some attitude, figure, and his own restraint against physical contact would be too great. But you find that people do not have too much upset about physical contact. I mean, human beings, Homo sapiens, not Homo psychologists. I do not have too much upset about touching somebody who is injured. They think that is the thing to do. They're almost sure of it. I say a dog knows this. If you get hurt, you've got a dog who likes you. You're going to have an awful hard time keeping that dog's tongue in his teeth. Because he'll come over and try to lick the wound or bruise or something of the sort. Quite interesting. This is a very great assist because it can be taught to people. Now, let's be a little more positive. Let's say he's a very good auditor, and he wanted to render an assist on somebody who had a very indefinite difficulty. That's the hardest one to render an assist on. The fellow hurts, but he can't say where. He doesn't know what has happened to him. He doesn't tell you what has occurred, and so on. He just feels bad. Well, you can be just as indefinite as the difficulty. And that is simply locational process, just as such. You'll find out this will win many times when much more significant, definite, positive, coming to the lip processes. I have a show. mine, because I did not continue and assist. You understand when an awful lot of people go by, you occasionally can be granted a miss. And the miss was of this wise. In fact, nobody has died of Scientology or Dianetics, as I know of. There have been a few that have found out, some old person has found out that he could climb out of his head and go his way, and he thanked the auditor very much, and covertly kicked the bucket 3 nights later. This has happened a few times, but this is what that person wanted. And nothing to do with Scientology. Scientologists taught him that he could, and he didn't. Now, this particular case with a young girl who had diabetes. She also had a migraine headache, which was quite chronic. She was in very, very bad condition, and she was around the organization. Not in an auditing capacity. She was a tiny bit of a squirrel, as a matter of fact. But nevertheless, many processes have been run on this girl, all without subjective reality or success. And one day she had a headache, and I stopped what I was doing, and I said, well, now, I'm going to direct your attention here just a minute. And I said, look at the chair, look at the wall, ceiling, look at the floor, look at the desk, look at this, look at that, and so on. Headache turned off. Difficulty went away. First time she'd ever had any relief of any kind whatsoever. So I said, that's fine. And as the sands of time run, she got no more practice. I didn't acquaint anybody with this particularity and how this worked and so forth. And within about a year, her basic difficulties with diabetes and the migraine and so forth had killed her. There was a process that worked on her, and my sole crime here was simply not informing an auditor that this did work. Therefore, an assist does carry with it, unfortunately, a certain responsibility. If you go and assist casually to somebody out in the public and do not shove something that resembles a ministerial or professional calling card in his pocket, you are making an error. Not that the assist will kill him, but that he will know there is help somewhere and from where he comes. Therefore, an auditor walking around without a pack of cards is doing a fool. In this particular case, the girl's auditor was living in the vicinity. I didn't even inform what I was doing, and this looked rather mysterious and complicated to her. And she never, I found out later, information to her boyfriend. You can't count on this happening. So the least you can do is to leave the doors open. Now, if you get to feeling bad again, why, promise me, no fixation, that you will come back and see me at once. This would be intruding. She didn't tell her auditor. She had no name for the process. That was that. Now, there's many a person that has passed under your hands the future of which you have no knowledge of at all. Kipling and other poets, the more nostalgic lines, speak of ships that pass in the night and shadows that pass in the day. An auditor goes through life and he casts his shadow or his lightness upon many, many people. And they have really no cognizance of what has happened at all if he is rendering an assist. He says, do this, do this, do that. Maybe he wins, maybe he loses, because this is the type of session least calculated to procure orderly results. Certainly, these people have been helped. They don't know really by what, except some word that the auditor kept saying. They don't even know he's an auditor. They don't know anything about it at all. So I would say that the assist does carry with it an additional responsibility of showing a person on whom it has been successful where he can obtain further assistance, and by whom the assistance was given. stood in the hospital, anteroom, reception room, emergency reception room, and as people came in, have spotted them up, straightened them out, squared them around, with one process or another, unconscious or not, done things for them, and so forth. And it wasn't until I had done this several times that I became aware of the fact that I was pulling benders. I was pulling people back to right, because they had no slightest knowledge. Who did it, where it was done, or anything else. As far as they knew, I might very well have just been a doctor on the ward, or an innocent bystander, or a visitor to somebody else that had no knowledge of this. In other words, I did not impress the person with my identity. Now, this goes further. It goes into processing. If they do not know an auditor's presence, they do not respond as readily. Now, we've known that for quite a while. Apply it, if you please, during, before, during, and after the assist. Now, the way you apply it is a very simple way. One, be yourself. Be positive. Be professional. Be definite. Card. Make sure the card is easily enough understood. Don't ask them ever for permission. Just do it. No reason to wander around and give them funny notions. If you want to help some stranger out, just help him out. Don't explain to him or any bystander. And what do you know? You always then are able to help him out. Otherwise, you'll have to stand there explaining, waiting for somebody's permission. You don't bother with that. You act like you are the one in charge, and you'll be in charge. And this is part and parcel to knowledge of how to do an assist. You've got to be the person in charge. This has to be fairly good, as far as you're concerned, that you overcome the informality of the session where they mark the group. And if you do it extremely well, then you will totally overcome the informality of the session, and the assist will amount almost to auditing. Big accident. Bunch of people pressed around. Cops trying to push them back. They'll push the people back. Then man, then push the cop back. The officer keeps these people at a distance. Over the victim snapping back to life. Sounds funny. One of the ways you can do this is always have your silver cross handy and hang it on your collar. It's a very, very much of an open sesame. Nobody would that much argue with you. If you are enough aware, everybody else will realize that you are the one that is there. Therefore, such things as panic, worry, wonder, upset, looking dreamily into the far distance, wondering what is wrong or what should be done, are no part of your makeup if you are rendering the system. Cool, calm, and collected. That to take control of any given situation, it is only necessary to be more there than everybody else. That's about all you can say about it. There's no necromancy involved. Just be there. The others aren't. And if you will be there enough, then somebody else will pull himself out of it and go on living. If you're not there very much, this person you're auditing won't pull himself up much higher than you. You get the idea. All right, now before we tip off into any further things, it is then understood that an auditor to some degree, when rendering an assist, must make up with presence what he lacks in surroundings and agreements. intensely effective assists. I have rendered assists that have looked like miracles with exclamation points, and people have always thereafter thought they were miracles. I will say this, you do not have to identify yourself by name so much as by personality, since I never much bothered to identify myself by name. Names are labels, I don't care what name I use. No log is using secondhand names. You don't want any names, go down and look over the tombstones. There's a bunch of good ones. Not occupied now. Certain necromancy taking names off tombstones, by the way, that's not amusing. Necromancy means the science or activities concerned with the dead. But there is, it does mean something. It's a sort of an unoccupied area. I remember one time down in Savannah, I went down to the cemetery, and because it was a nice open place to walk, there wasn't much. Walked around, and there was the Reverend somebody or other, whose name I won't mention. And he had about the biggest dog garden tombstone down there you ever saw. He must have been a well respected fellow. I went down and had my card, myself some cards printed with his name. And I think he died about 1810, something of this sort. And whenever I present one of these cards to anybody, they knew at once and immediately that I belonged in Savannah. It was one of the most interesting things here I saw. This big cemetery down, hardly anybody but fails to walk through it, they look through it, they look over things, so forth. This name had been hitting in the teeth like an advertising billboard for years. Just that all by itself. Of course, the man's family was still there, so the name was quite common. Cemeteries are good places. Fine, cemeteries, things like that. But an identity only vaguely supports your own feeling of beingness, and that is what gets you caught. That's merely an imprisonment. That's like the silver conker on the Spanish saddle. It's the saddle that you ride, not the conker. And the name is just a silver plate. It's dazzling, flashy. It's something that people think you need. But if you're going along through life leaning on a name, you're going to be in difficulty sooner or later, because if you lean all the way, you'll find that a name is merely a syllable. And you are capable of being alive and granting life. All right, so willingness is necessary. One of the ways of convincing people of beingness, and one of the ways of being there, is to exercise control. And of all the ways of being there, this is the most important. Positive, undeniable exercise of control. That is a fabulous thing in its activity. You start to control the situation. With a high enough ARC, good enough presence and factuality, there's nobody present but will step back and let you control the situation. You're entitled to, in the first place, because of seeing know-how. Now, the control of body, attention, or thought comprises the majority of your knowledge. The majority of Scientology simply points in this direction, as far as its effective application is on this planet at this time. It goes up in creativeness, it goes up into an awful lot of other things above this level, but the observable thing is control of attention, objects, thoughts. And where you have good confidence in being able to do that, let me assure you, you can do it a lot better. When you know positively how to do that, you make sure in that rise that everybody else knows you can do that too, and you just make them know by you doing it. It's very simple. So you have all of these things available and you render them fit. Now, I don't think you ever would think of a riot as being a situation which necessitated an assist, or an assist as applicable to a riot. But a riot is simply a psychosomatic momentary injury or traumatic condition on the third dynamic. Could you settle riot? Well, if you can settle riot, you can certainly settle one person who is in a riot. So inside himself and with himself and so forth, he is in a terrible condition. The antithesis of any pain, disturbance, tumult, is order. The thing which controls tumult is order. And conversely, the thing which controls order is tumult. If you know those two things, you can become the world's worst, best, agent provocateur. You need only bring order into a confused situation, bring confusion into an orderly situation to control everything. In the field of motion, action, and objects. Now that is a fantastic simplicity, and one which takes some grasping. Conceive as order merely a fixed position, idea, and attitude. Policeman. He knows what he should do with the accident victim. He'll lie there and bleed to death. Say ambulance comes. He knows what he's supposed to do. Maybe he'll put out a crank, but maybe he won't. Keep the people away. Keep everybody away. Keep everything stopped. There's no particular reason why this should be. Now, you can wonder what the order he is creating, or cancel his orders by creating confusion he can't handle. Of the two, the first is the best in that situation. You aid and abet and cap the order he is creating. The third is chosen of having a confused accident scene, which is by now not at all confused. And ask him to straighten it out. You would channel his attention in the direction it has already gone, and so you control his attention. And the people are standing back. The ambulance is on the way. But remember, those people are still moving a little bit, and they're still breathing. There's still a tiny bit of motion going on. And you would ask him something on the order of, can't we have it a little quieter and more orderly here? He would once perceive that there was far too much confusion and motion. Everybody ought to be standing there as well. He would simply then come under your direction because you have simply channeled his attention in the direction it was already going. Therefore, he didn't control to that degree of confusion, but supposing it didn't channel at all. That is not a good situation to demonstrate the use of confusion. Let us say that some young girl is going to be put in an institution. He is not too late. He may face this situation someday. Young girl's going to be put into an institution. She's perfectly all right. There's nothing wrong with it. Just because her parents think somebody around there has got to be crazy. And they are being adamant. They are being order. They have the situation in control. They've got it all in their wraps. They've got a psychiatrist, a trained psychiatrist. They carry him around on. They don't even put chains and collars on him anymore. And they let him walk in living rooms and everything else, even housebroken. And they're going to do all this, and then there it goes, and that's what's going to happen. That was always good. By you creating further fixed positions in ideas, you only aid and abet their fixed ideas in the direction where you're going, but it's going in the wrong direction, isn't it? They're going to get somebody in an institution. All right, you as a minister need only create enough confusion in their minds to completely upset this fixed order of things. If you ever want to overset a fixed order, create confusion. If you ever want to overset confusion, create a fixed order. You pick out of a scene those beings in the scene whose attention is channeled in the direction you want attention to go, and then you aid and abet that attention stream which already exists. Or, where you have only with fixed positions and fixed ideas to overcome. We simply take very turbulent individuals from the scene who are caught in the confusion, again, those fixed ideas and channels, and we make their confusion much more confused. At the same time, yourself imposing another order in another direction. The mechanics of taking over any confused scene are simply the mechanics of trying to get a street clear to see through the morass of cross purposes, commands, ideas, and environments in which you've lived. And whether that applies to the third dynamic or otherwise, the laws are still there. And it tells you then that the imposition of order on a street clear comes foremost in an assist. Now, you always count on something. You always count on the fact that the Satan himself would, if he could, do the right thing. And if you work on that possibility, let it be wrong. You work on the possibility of something else trying to do the wrong thing. Therefore, the keynote of a Satan is order. So in an assist for recruiting one person, we put things in the environment and positions into an orderly state as the first step, unless you're trying to stop a pumping artery, but that's not an assist, that's first aid. And first aid may very often precede an assist. Something that you should understand. We've had to drive this home with spikes occasionally with auditors. First aid always precedes an assist. Always. Look over the situation from the standpoint of how much first aid is required here. And when you have solved that situation, then render an assist. You'll find somebody that has got a temperature of 118.9 degrees, or a little exaggerated. It may very well be that he needs to lie down and cover up, and although antibiotics are much overrated, he might be better off with a shot in the biscuit with some penicillin or something of the sort than with an assist. You understand that? To that degree, I wish I could bring all of you to simply use medical doctors. Stop backing up from them and smoking with them. They're useful bedposts to have in the side. They're good mechanics. They're very bad, by the way, with bandages, but they're usually very good with setting bones. And if you can keep them from chopping, you can just take the axes and saws away from them, slap their wrist lightly, improvingly, and put them in the direction of orthopedics, decent obstetrics, and other mechanical actions, or biochemical activities. They're a valuable possession for you. They're a very valuable possession. Worthwhile having around. None of you can set a broken bone, and those things can cause a considerable amount of difficulty. amount of difficulty. As orthopedic. Auditing will not shut off a pumping artery, but it sends it through. If you're going into the zone of accidents and you're going to be in the vicinity of a great deal of destruction and chaos, you're very foolish not to have your Red Cross first aid certificate. Very foolish not to have that. You have classes all the time, go down and get it. Before an auditor is permitted to become a social worker in ASCDR, it will be required of him that he have a Red Cross first aid certificate. And I'm hard to get. The best textbook is not the Red Cross textbook, but the Boy Scout Merit Badge textbook on first aid. It's a very fine textbook. It wasn't written for medical doctors. It was written for kids. Therefore, it communicates. But the doctor is somebody for you to use. When you find a doctor opposing you, bluntly, you have two choices, controlling or confusing. And the first is so adequate that you find yourself almost never called upon to use the second. It would only be when you couldn't get in contact with him, when you couldn't talk to him directly, that you would have to resort to such a thing. You start walking the doctor around and directing his attention, telling him what to do and what not to do, the next thing you know, he'll be asking you what to do. These boys are pretty well submerged into the mechanics of the situation, and they do with an aspect of a wind-up doll when they're really directed in a sensible direction. It's a deadly thing when you go into a doctor's office and you're a Scientologist, and you want something. You want some of this biochemical activity. You want something of this character. It's a remarkable thing if you handle and direct his attention as a physical object or his thoughts. But you always wind up with what you want. I don't care what doctor. You want 2 pounds of strychnine, you'll give you a good prescription for it. It doesn't matter. It's your belief that you can't control him. And the number of traumas you have as doctors hanging over your bed of pain, controlling you. Now lie still while we snap this bone together. That's right. It's not going to hurt at all. The number of lives and bad control which has been exerted against physical bodies by doctors has brought into the state of being that a doctor's very hard to control, and the great consequences will pursue if you do not obey the doctor. And this is for the birds. Because doctors exerting this much control unknowingly all the time, and this much bad control, and operating under this much dangerous condition, can be marched around like automatons and don't ever think otherwise. Fantastic. So you may often have to find some method of controlling, handling, arresting, directing. Personnel will get in your road before you can render an assist. And this will happen even if it's your mother. Your mother is hypothetically has become ill. Your father has decided that old Walker Jones is the one to have you go damn well or anything as wrong as her. Junior left the other day and she feels she'll never see Junior anymore. And she's gotten sick accordingly. And you know that she can pop her in line. But no, it's got to be Dr. Jones and she's going to be under sedative and she'll be out of auditing as a bird. You've got people interposing between you and what you can do. So you just might as well realize that an assist requires that you control the entire environment and personnel associated with the assist if necessary. You understand that? Now, by this time, you should understand that the assist is nothing else than auditing. It is auditing on several dynamics. And therefore, it's much harder to do than auditing in a formal room. It requires presence. There have been some chaps around who are terrifically good at assists. Awfully good. One of them, Carpenter, down in Middle East. that it rendered him sick. But he didn't get good enough, as far as I was concerned. Because he actually had a bunch of guys come along who did not use his ability, but used his ability. So he didn't bring everybody up in tone enough. What he did was bring illnesses. And he was doing it all by himself in the name of or some other identity, we don't care what. But he had to control a very large number of people and dynamics while he was doing one of these things. And out of this we get what is known as a miracle. A miracle is only a surprising change or occurrence. In the dictionary, it says, not done by physical means, which is a completely unworkable definition. There aren't anything but physical means. If you have to do with communication, you're going through physical relays. And you could do just as well as that fellow down there in the Middle East without any real trouble. If you could just bring yourself to face the fact that you have to give enough presence and enough control to enough dynamics to snap the environment into a compliance with your postulate. And you postulate somebody's going to pick up his bed and walk, then you have to be also willing to and capable of moving around the people who are going to watch him pick up his bed and walk. That's where these miracle workers miss. They always do it for a pitch. They think, my, isn't it gratifying? Everybody's going to say, isn't it wonderful? So they always put an audience there. And then they themselves can't stand surprise, unknowingness, and awe. And so the audience eventually robs them of their ability to perform a miracle. Very simple. I seem to be going very far afield. But I'm not going far afield. Your friend was washing dishes, or your wife, or your husband was washing dishes in the kitchen. There was a horrendous crash. They come down off the sink, hit the floor, and as they are going, he grabs on and he grabs the butcher knife as it falls. This is chaos. You go in, you say, well, let me fix that up. One of the first things you'd have to do to fix it up is probably wind some bandage around it to stop the bleeding one way or the other. The funny part of this, part of the first aid would be to pick up the dishes and put them back on the sink. The pieces, or sweep the pieces together into a more orderly semblance. First symptom of control. First aid with it to ban a matter of control. You say introverted into the cut that you notice what you're doing. But you relieve the anxiety that all his blood is going to pour out, and your first attention to the case is attention to the environment. A little bit of attention to the environment. Now, the least you would do would be to make him sit down somewhere. But to remove him from the scene of the accident is not as desirable as auditing him there. Now that is directly contrary, perhaps, to what you believe, but it is true. That's why you bring a little order to the environment. One, to show him that you can bring order. This is a covert demonstration of that fact. You go bring Tinkerbell who brings order. See, this is easy as that. I messed it up, he's putting it together again. There. All right, a little more order, then you dispose of the person by having the person sit down, make himself comfortable, do something. In other words, you position. And then you're ready for technique. And only if you've done those things in an accident scene are you ready for technique. Quite remarkable. You've manifested order in a much wider sphere than a cut hand. in order to bring about a healing of a cut hand. If you understand that, responsibility always extends much greater than the immediate zone of commotion. You never miss. Bring order to the wider environment, you can bring it to the narrow environment. Bring it to the narrow environment, you can bring it to the wider environment. That's not a rule to that. The gradient scale of how much order can you bring.
Direction of attention, but this one I gave you first, which you could teach others, is a workable one.
Pressure thing is hard enough, they can't help but pay attention to them. And you're straighten up, bummed up ankles and so forth. Now, if you want it to come all the way out, and no bruise to be left, then we've got him up to where we can. Control his thoughts, they are unchaotic enough. We can control them. We then keep the ankle from going away, keep the other ankle from going away, keep the right ankle going away, left ankle going away, back and forth. If it doesn't seem to be flattening, direct his attention some more because he's not keeping it from going away. In this life, you can always have a successful assist. And the assist all come under the heading of control. And the beingness of the person and his presence there is what makes the control possible. So part of control is always presence. Identity. Person. The one who takes charge. The one who has things under control. If you know these things well, you can do a terrific number of things. It does happen that there is a process which even goes further than this, which directs his knowingness and his attention at the same time, but is, unfortunately, not really an assist-type process, because it's more than a surface process. The person has to be in session. You have to be able to control his attention and his body and his thoughts, and if you have done that, then he's in session. You're no longer doing an assist. So assist, dominate, dominantly require that you direct attention of the preacher and dispose of his person one way or the other, and eventually take over control of his thoughts on the subject. But by the time you have all these things in line, he is in session and you have already crossed the borderline. You're no longer doing an assist. The preacher is there, he's in the environment, he's under the auditor's control, and if the auditor is there, then you're in an auditing session. So what you really do is do an assist up to the time when the fellow can ambulate, put him in a more favorable environment, and give him auditing. So the assist is what you do on the street, and auditing is what you do in the auditing room when he comes to you after this assist.